welcome to Season 5, Episode 2 of the SBEP Team Podcast. You are here again with me, Mr. Southwell. Mr. Doyle, good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Nash, good morning.
Good morning, good to be back.
Yeah, we're back just the 3 weeks later than we said we would be, which is always good and professional.
Better late than never.
We're going to do, again, we're doing it again from our homes during what is the UK's lockdown. What are we going to try and look at this morning?
I think we're going to talk through state of play of the nation again and what the developments have been in professional sport, because there's been a few little updates, haven't there?
Yeah.
For the first part of the podcast, and then we're going to go specifically for our year 12 PE students for the second half, aren't we? We're going to start talking about their next piece of coursework and some examples they can use.
Yeah, and I think if anybody wants to pick up anything on this, they can as well, which is good. What about the state of the nation and how have we been during lockdown?
Mr. Nash, with three small children at home, you've been particularly energetic in the garden, I've seen. Been doing lots of creative things.
Yeah, you've got to keep active, keep busy. So we've done lots of different things. We have been using our ability to go for a walk. We're quite fortunate where we live. We can walk into some nice big open fields and be away from everyone. So we've done that quite a lot. And we've also been doing tent building, fire making, you name it, we've done it in the back garden.
Love that.
What about you, Mr. Doyle?
It's been interesting, actually. Started off by really making use of the exercise time that we're allowed to go out for. Was getting stronger and stronger on my runs, sort of getting up towards 10K each time, which was nice. And then a little cough developed in our household. And we've been following all the rules and self-isolating properly. It's really is striking how important physical activity is, because that is the thing I miss the most now after the 4 days of not being able to leave at all. Actually going out for that run for sort of 40 minutes, 45 minutes was really important. But we're making better use of our garden, very much like Mr. Nash, and making sure we still get out and get some fresh air.
Yeah, I seem to have been walking all over Milton Keynes, finding little redways and stuff and things, which has been good. Did I tell you guys the other time I tried to buy a golf net online?
Yeah,
we were excited for you.
Have you ever used that website? Is it Wish or Very, whatever it's called? I think it's Wish.
Yeah, I'm avoiding like the plague.
Yeah, well, I didn't, and I tried to buy one, and it never came, so I had to get a refund. And now I've tried to go online and buy one anywhere I can, and every single place in the world is sold out.
I've got the same idea.
Yeah,
so mate, just buy a bit of tarpaulin, bit of rope, and you go to saw it, mate.
Yeah,
I'm sure
the neighbours will be thrilled when it goes flying through.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's been a tough watch, but we can do what we want. But the thing I've missed the most is obviously getting out and playing, and obviously spectating sport as well. And it looks like we're getting closer to getting something back on, perhaps on live TV.
Yeah, I saw that they're looking to put together some behind closed doors golf tournaments, aren't they?
Yeah, that's going to be that'll be like really, really well viewed if it goes ahead. I think it's a bit optimistic doing it in the middle of June again, but I'd watch anything at the moment. I think I watched people playing Monopoly last night, which was how sad it's got for me.
That was intense.
Yeah.
I still haven't quite got over the loss to Mr. Nash on that one.
Yeah.
Monopoly champion.
If anybody does need tips on stuff to do at home, virtual Monopoly is brilliant. That can go on for hours.
But I still find it fascinating that obviously during this lockdown, one of the things that people are realising more than anything is the benefit of exercise.
Yeah.
And just a bit of fresh air. Take it for granted, don't you, the fact that you can, walk to work, get out and about while you're at work, whatever it might be. But now people are going, I'm actually going to use that hour to do something to keep my own mental health and to keep myself active. And I think it's brilliant and I've quite enjoyed it. I'm still doing Joe Wicks in the morning, first thing in the morning. I see that as my starting point of the day. It makes me get out of bed and it gives me something to do. And then afterwards I'm up, ready for breakfast and so on.
I think that is really good. And I think a lot of people hopefully will keep doing that once we're back to some sort of normal. But I think I've learned the last few days, I don't think normal is going to be what it was before anymore.
Yeah, agree with that. Especially when it comes to spectating in big crowds. I think that is going to be one of the latest or the later developments when we're talking about getting back to normal.
Yeah.
That is going to be very different.
Yeah, it's going to be a real tough one. I think next week or so as well, we're going to probably see more announcements coming out from governing bodies about what will happen with professional sport. I think everybody is waiting on what the Premier League will do with their season.
The Bundesliga have, or some Bundesliga clubs, have started to go back to training.
Yeah.
Is that right? But they're using social distancing measures, so they're only allowed to train in groups of maximum five, and they have to keep 2 metres away, so no contact work.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. But again, if we look at that, that's in a country whom I think we can say are well thought of how the country have dealt with that. There's lower rates of the virus there and things like that, so they've been able to go and do that quicker.
Yeah.
Over here, it's a little bit different, so it might be that we have to wait a bit longer.
I mean, what have we got? Rugby have said they're going to just cancel the season, haven't they? It's all done for them.
Yeah. I would love to talk about rugby, but as the self-proclaimed football pundit for SBE PE podcast, because I would want my expertise to be used wisely. I happened to see this morning that potentially in August they're going to play the Champions League final. They've sort of set a date for August, and they're looking to sort of finish off that tournament with a weeks-long tournament to just play those last few games, then play into the final. So that's interesting. We've got those developments coming up.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting watch as well, that seeing that many games in that short space of time in club football.
Yeah.
It'd be an amazing watch. And one of the odd things to come out of it is actually these crazy ideas of how to get things done. They might be incredible to watch.
Yeah, it'd be good. Tonight, I'm watching the PDC Darts. They're doing a home tournament tonight.
How about?
So I'm watching that from home. It's 32 days long, so I think that'll be at least a little bit of live sport to watch. I can't wait.
I made the virtual Grand National, didn't we?
Yeah, the I think that was fixed, though, wasn't it? Surely. There's no way that can be legit. But yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing a bit more of that, and hopefully we'll get a bit more back to normal as the weeks go on. Should we talk about what we're going to do today? Because we want to try and aim this towards a group of students, but it is really for anybody that's got a bit of an interest in it as well. Do you want to talk about what we're going to do, Mr. Doyle?
Yeah, so we're looking at sports psychology. The Year 12 double students who we're sort of aiming this at will be aware that they've been working on a little bit of psychology, and then they were going to go towards working on their Unit 10, which is a sports event organisation. But the event, the County School Games, has now officially been cancelled for the summer, meaning that we're going to switch back to psychology. It's a really good one for a podcast, because actually we're going to talk in the Learning AIM B that they're going to move on to now about group dynamics, which essentially looks at how well players can work together as a team, and the variances of what can happen in a team situation to try and be as successful as possible. And what we're not going to do is we're not going to bore people by going into real depth about the coursework element. We're really going to talk about examples and try to bring some of the theory to life of group dynamics.
I think that's good, and it's probably fair to say this will be their homework, won't it, for when we probably come back after Easter, to give this a listen, and then we can start putting a bit of work together for them, can't we?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, best place to probably kick off with that is looking at, obviously, group dynamics and looking at how teams are successful and how they work together. And then, are we all familiar with the Leicester City story?
What a story, and what an example for group dynamics. Mr. Nash, you must know a bit about it.
Oh, yes, football pundit. I'm all over this. But I think I'm going to hand over to Mr. Southwell to talk about it.
So we've got a team in Leicester City that really should never have been anywhere near a league title. They hadn't been for a long time previous. It's probably fair to say they bounced up and down the divisions for a few years. But I think it was it 2015-16 season or 2016-17? They ended up winning the Premier League title above a load of other teams that have got tons of money, lots and lots of different players from across the world. But how did they do it?
Well, a lot of people would say that, you know, something just clicked in there. It could have been the manager, and leadership is a massive part of group dynamics. Some people could have said that it was just one or two great players. They did have N'Golo Kante, who sort of came from nowhere, and has gone on to be one of the better Premier League players. Riyad Mahrez, for example, who went on to Man City sort of after that season. But where it links in lovely is that actually it was a bit of a process that started a couple of years before. So Leicester City started to make some waves in the Championship a few seasons before that, and they won the league. But then they nearly went down from the Premier League. They went through a little bit of a curve in terms of how well they were performing. It started going up really, really quickly, but then it had a little bit of a dip. And where it links into group dynamics is this group process, how groups form together. You've got a few phases of them, haven't you? So you've got your forming is the first one, where groups all come together. It's kind of new, it's kind of fresh, and you have maybe new transfers or a new manager come in. After the forming stage, you go into the storming stage. I don't know if anyone wants to sort of go through a little bit about what the storming stage might involve.
Well, maybe look at forming first of all. Mr. Nash, you've built a lot of teams yourself, you've played in a lot of teams. What's the forming stage like?
So for me, when I was looking at the forming stage, I started to look at successful teams. And I know one of the examples we were going to talk about was England rugby, and looking at what England rugby have achieved. But for me, I looked beyond that and I looked at a world-class team that's consistently performing, and that's New Zealand rugby team.
Yeah.
Because not only did they perform well this time through, and they didn't have the success that they wanted in the World Cup, but they've consistently been one of the top teams in the world. And so you sort of ask the question, why? Why can one place, a relatively small country, perform so well? And for me, it builds on their ethos. And their ethos and their culture starts very young when they first get into rugby. Obviously, rugby's the national sport. But ultimately, what they're teaching people is this idea of sportsmanship, respect for the game, and respect for your opponents. And perhaps above all of those other things, that the team is king. And the individual performances are second to that. The team is king. Yeah. And I think that's really important to, when starting any team, that everyone understands that it's all about everyone there, not one individual that's going to spoil it for others.
It doesn't sort of matter who you've got coming into that group. That ethos stands alone, as if you are going to be joining into this team or if you aspire to be part of this movement, that's your starting point. That's where you're forming, and that's where it can all kind of come together a little bit. Because they've got am I right in thinking they've got a new head coach?
Starting
that cycle all over again now.
Yeah, and it links really nicely to the, recently when England played Wales in the Six Nations, and I don't know if you saw the incident with Joe Marler, where he came in as a bit of a joker and ended up getting himself into a bit of trouble. Now, he got some criticism after that, and one of these head coaches were talking about the fact that actually a team doesn't need that bit of humour. It needs to be focused on the team performance, and that distracts people to what they should be doing. Now, my personal opinion is I don't so wholly believe that. I think sometimes a little bit of humour can lighten the mood, can help relieve the stresses that people might be feeling in that situation. And it's different ways. But ultimately, what that person was talking about was the team is the most important thing, and it's not just about that individual who wants to be that one-off, show-off sort of person.
It's very fair to say that, I suppose, in the forming stage, you've got people who are trying to figure out what other people are like in their team, aren't they? And that's when you start to figure out what you're interested in, have we got any experiences that are the same, what's your background like? And if you look at the All Blacks, their background is going to be the same as each other, because they've all going to have been to similar rugby schools, come through similar pathways and academies and things like that. And that's where you start
to form. Ajax was very much like that, wasn't it, for football? Amsterdam, they had that ethos running all the way through from the youth through to the senior team.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, so forming is where you kind of really start to feel each other out a little bit, look at those sort of first impressions as well. What about when we look at that storming phase? Do you want to talk about the storming phase?
Yeah, I mean, storming in particular, I mean, it does what it says on the tin, really. It's where people come together and there is some there's some form of issues between them. It could be that you've got a couple of people vying for a leadership spot within the team, maybe going for that same spot. Or I know in basketball, for example, very recently been looking at some of the great teams. There's five positions on the pitch or on the court. And within that, that means sometimes you get a couple of really strong personalities, really strong players, but they don't want to be put out onto, I think there was one I was talking about, they got pushed out onto the power forward position, where actually centre is kind of where you want to be as that main man. now, or woman, of course. Now, those kinds of things will then lead to, they could lead to arguments, they could lead to disagreements, but they could also lead to the social side of the team becoming a little bit fragmented. And I say could, because this is where Leicester City got it right. They were really, really positive about making sure that in terms of the social side of things, where those arguments, disagreements, the way that people felt about one another, whether they were too arrogant or whether they were a show-off or a showboater or whether they didn't pull their weight, they made sure that everybody was valued as part of that team and that whole. And during that storming phase that went on, and it did have a little bit of a negative impact, they actually changed the leadership, changed the management, and that's where Claudio Ranieri came in. And he was the big proponent of making sure that they got through that storming stage, that everybody pulled in the same direction, they were able to air all their grievances, get them out of the way, ready for them to be able to move into that next phase.
I think that's one bit that they got absolutely spot on. They also didn't have one really big franchise player at the time. They didn't have that one super signing. They had a lot of players they brought from different places. I know a lot of them have gone for big money now, but they didn't have that one. So they didn't have people challenging different roles. Didn't have people vying for the role of captain. You didn't necessarily have people saying, I should be in this position, that position. And I think that for them was really a big part of their success, really. But storming, that can kind of tell you which way your team's going to go, because you could obviously then never get past that stage. And you could go backwards in that as well. And you need to get that bit right in order to kind of move forward a little bit as well, I think. I think that's really important.
Well, I had there was something that I found, and this is something key for those students that are going to need to do some research. I looked at the Ryder Cup team, the USA Ryder Cup team from 2018. Yeah. So the golfers, they came over and they were supposed to be the best group of US players that were coming over together for years and years and years in terms of their individual success in tournament play. They should have been absolutely outstanding. And if I seem to remember back, although the European team was quite strong, America probably came out as sort of favourites. But there was a little bit of social cohesion issues over there in the storming phase. They didn't quite get out of it. There's a couple of players in particular. Patrick Reed was one player, and I've got a bit of an article up in here. And it talks about how Patrick Reed had always played previously with Jordan Spieth. Yeah. And those were two of the better players on the team. But Reed basically said that Spieth decided to, or he had some sort of problem with him. He couldn't identify what it was and went into the arms of another player, one of his close friends, Justin Thomas. And Reed had said that he was blindsided by the split. Now, this is where storming really comes into it. And obviously, there's psychological differences between the opinions of each of these players. Now, Reed ended up playing with Tiger Woods, but he actually called Tiger Woods, quoted, as his second choice. I don't know whether or not anybody in the world is able to really come and say with proper clarity that Tiger Woods is anybody's second choice as a golfer.
I think you've got there two very different things, because Patrick Reed and Jordan Spieth had played together back in 2016 as well, and they won everything when they played together. I think the problem was Patrick Reed's personality didn't actually fit in with Jordan Spieth's personality, and he didn't want to play with him. And that never happened before on a US team, which is very, very odd for those guys. And for somebody to break like the code of conduct and come out and criticise in the media, that really affected their performance, because when you look at those two teams, America had 12 players that were inside the top 20 of the world, and they really should have won that tournament based just purely on the statistics of it. And you could see there, if you watch the celebrations of a European team, that's two teams in very different stages of development.
Exactly. And that's where I say, I don't feel as though they came out, the US team came out of the storming phase of that particular tournament to be able to progress on to where they needed to be. I mean, some of the guys on the European side, they were famous. They were very good performers. I don't know whether you'd say the likes of sort of Alexander Noren, for example, even somebody like Henrik Stenson, who was so good, wouldn't say there would be household names over in the USA, whereas some of the USA players were definitely household names over in Europe. So it's really difficult to judge sometimes where you've got such talent. Well, actually, it's really easy to see where the psychological factors aren't meshing together.
Well, I think they had in that team for the first time a couple of characters that didn't follow that very strong American, let's all get behind one another. Because if you watch the women's equivalent, the Solheim Cup, the women on that side, they're so united, it's incredible. And their passion for it was very different to the men's side of it. And I thought that was a really interesting watch between the two of them.
Does anyone feel as though we've missed that a little bit in recent years? 2012, Team GB was the first time where I really, really felt as though I was watching both team and social cohesion. People being able to work together when they were performing in the relay, for example, work together really, really well in that task way. But also socially, where they're celebrating different disciplines, different events that they're completely not. They were so together as a team, and that was one of the biggest things about 2012, wasn't it?
I think that was evident, and I think that's playing out a little bit now, actually, in society. There's a lot more people getting behind the British public than had done before. I know there's been a few sort of famous people called out about over what's going on, but the British public, when you look at like the NHS claps that are going on at nights and stuff, that's people that are starting to sort of get together as a pretty good group of people now.
It's that shared focus. It goes right back to what you said, Mr. Nash, about the All Blacks having that ethos. I think if that's a really good example as well, Mr. Southall, about now we've got an ethos of let's get through this really challenging period and let's get behind, you know, the carers and the people that can make a difference. And that's absolutely huge. And also, if you take it into another realm completely, some of the biggest major businesses, especially the multinational corporations in particular, almost all of them that have been successful over time have had leaders that have instilled that teamwork, that ethos, that caring and looking after each other. Look at Growth Mindsets, a book by Dr. Carol Dweck, who, again, would be really good for the Year 12s in particular to see if they can get hold of an ebook of that, because there is an entire chapter on sport and how growth mindsets within sport link to the growth mindsets within big companies and the money that they've made through it. There's an enormous amount about people working together and developing these teams to be able to perform in whatever area they're in.
Yeah, I think that's good. I think we've got obviously forming and storming. Once we get to that norming stage of things, we've got it where teams start to know each other a little bit more. You might find they're socialising together a bit more, particularly if they're like a really new side put together. And then you can also start to see in those teams that are in that norming phase, they're able to give like feedback to each other, and it can be constructive, and there's not going to be that worry of there being an argument if you're being critical of someone else's performance as well. What teams do you think are out there at the moment that you would say are comfortably in that norming stage?
Go ahead. I was thinking about something that I've been reading recently. It's not necessarily a sports example, but it is people performing at the top of their game.
Yeah.
Now, I'm a bit of a fan of the SAS Are You Tough Enough on Channel 4. Have you watched it?
Yeah, I know the programme.
Seen it before.
And so I've been interested in the SAS and finding out about these elite soldiers, if you like, these people who are the top of their game. It may not necessarily be a sport, but they are the best of the best, and how they get to that point. And I've just finished reading Anne Middleton's second book and moved on to the book about leadership strategies within the SAS. I've only just started that book, so hopefully I'll talk about it next time on the podcast. But within that, it got me thinking about this forming, storming, norming and performing, and where you get to a team of people that can operate the best without, you know, in the cover of darkness, without people even knowing they're there, and how they can be that good. And then I was thinking about that forming stage being possibly that forming stage, surely when people come to that SAS selection, when they're there to be chosen, they put themselves in that team, if you like, they come across to it. And that storming phase is probably that selection process, isn't it? What they're going to go through, that grueling, you know, few weeks of being pushed through to the limits. And then within that, you're going to start to see different people's personalities, the clashes, people not being able to operate as part of a team. Because ultimately, these people need to be, you know, strong individuals, but team players.
Yeah.
There's no time, again, for what we talked about earlier, with that one person who's got a big personality who just wants to take the lead all the time. You've got to be able to work together. And then that norming stage is after that selection, when you've got those people together, and they're able to operate in that, you know, start to work out each other's roles, and then be able to operate with each other in such a, you know, in such a smooth and you know, a great way. And I think thinking about those elite people gets you thinking about those different stages very clearly. You know, and obviously they go on to perform. And in the book that I was reading, it's talking about that these people may all, their hierarchy in place of people having, you know, their captains and so on. But ultimately, when it comes into working in a really strong environment, you've got to accept that everyone's got an opinion and everyone can offer something else. Mm. And so what I was reading in that book is that although there is that hierarchy, sometimes it's really important a team has people that can just talk to each other and share those ideas and not just have one person, because in the SAS you're dealing with quite a lot of alpha males, if you like, these people who are always used to being, you know, the big person as they walk into that room, the big personality, but they've got to suddenly then be able to operate with others, and that's what makes a great team, when people can step back and say, actually, what you're saying is equally as important as what this person with 30 years of experience is saying.
I think that's a really, really good way of putting that across. And something that I always try and do in the classroom is whenever I'm teaching this is get the class to look at themselves and think about their journey and where they're at as a class on that particular journey. Have they got themselves figured out yet? Do they know what their role is in that group? And you can do that really easily. You can do that in any setting. You can look at people you work with in your part-time job. You can do it with teams that you play on, teams that you watch, and you can figure out those processes pretty quickly. Kind of how they're getting on. I think that's a really good way of summing that up.
And a way of doing that is creating what they call a sociogram. And the reason I mention this is that is part of the coursework. And sociogram, very simply, is getting together on a piece of paper or a chalkboard or whiteboard, getting together all of the different people that make up a particular group or a team, and then trying to work out the links between them. Sometimes the arrows are only going to go one way. So if somebody has more respect or leans on or learns from another person, for example, it might necessarily not be reciprocated. And that's where actually there's a little bit of a sort of a team dynamic breakdown. You will find in there as well, in terms of the leadership, that there are some people that are relied on a lot more heavily or thought of a lot better within that particular team. And like you guys said, taking a step back and having a look at that and being able to plot out a sociograph just like that is a great way of figuring out where the team's at. In answer to your question earlier as well about, are there any teams at the minute that are breaking out of that storming stage and going into the norming stage, I was having a think about it there. Possibly, you might get to a stage where Man United could be in a situation where they're breaking out of that stage. If you think about how long it's taken Solskjaer to get into a position where he's dealing with Paul Pogba. Now, Paul Pogba has been essentially one big storming, hasn't he? As to whether or not he's going to perform, whether or not he can gel with the group, whether or not he wants to be that small fish in a medium-sized pond, if you like, or whether or not actually he's going to go and leave. Once that happens, that's the last big personality out of the way. And actually, he might have got that team into a position where they're getting results, they're consistent at home, but they're not necessarily breaking into that top four where they want to be. So they might start to be in that situation. That's where you want to stick with the manager, and that's where a lot of football teams in particular go wrong, because the leadership at that point needs to allow the team take a step back a little bit and allow the team to grow, and then they tend to get rid of the manager and create that process of forming all over again.
I think that one is there. It's quite a good summary of that one together. And then I think finally, if we look at the performance stage, which is kind of when you want to try and see some results from your team, I suppose, you find that leaders at that point are delegating their work a little bit more. You can concentrate on working with individuals. You know kind of where your weaknesses are. You know where you've got like your star performers. You know you've got your people to rely on. What else is there that's important though about that performance stage? Sort of, are we at a point there where everything should be working really well? Does that always produce results?
I think if a team gets into a stage where they are classed as performing, then it really does depend on the potential of the team. You can have somebody like Leicester exceeding their potential. They clearly were in the performing stage and they won the Premier League, and that was way above what anybody thought. They weren't able necessarily to replicate that on the European stage. They got to a certain point, but they weren't able to win that cup. So that's perhaps where they squeezed everything they possibly could out of the potential. Yeah. But I think the biggest thing that you've mentioned already is the fact that the leadership changes all the way through. At the very start, You've got a real autocratic style. That leader's coming in, being very directive about what they want to happen. And that's needed to create the ethos that we spoke about before. But when we get all the way to the end of it, and we're in that performing stage, you find you've already said that a lot of the work gets delegated. That leader would take a step back and would allow others then to take on board more prominent positions within that team, within that group, empowering them more and motivating them, hopefully, to then get the group working even better. And, I mean, the big example at the minute, I know we use football quite a lot, but Liverpool. Liverpool have been in the performing stage now for the last 18 months.
Yeah, I'd say that was a good one. I think you've got other things.
The season doesn't end.
Yeah, if the season doesn't end, they'll be all right, won't they? But there's other parts to that performing stage, and I think you've got, once you're up at that level and you're working, and obviously you're performing, you're starting to see some of the results. If you ever make a change to that team, the person coming in doesn't disrupt what's going on already. That's really important. If you think of any sport where you've got interchangeable team members, maybe through a transfer window or a trade, or if your team's like hand-picked because of something, that member of that team coming into disruption, that's going to potentially knock you back a stage. And it's really important anybody coming in fits in with that ethos, which is really fascinating watching a transfer market, because you've seen teams that will try and buy just the best players and just hopefully they'll all work together, whereas you see others that a bit more calculated, and they might pick the person that fits in with the team well. And that's where that becomes a bit more fascinating to look at it as a model, really, and how it works well together. And I think, again, that's important. The other way to look at it is if you're one of the members of the team. If it's easy to be part of that team, then your team is performing. If you are having struggles, or if you feel like there's a little bit of conflict, then maybe you're not where you think you are on that model. And I think that's another way of probably coming out and looking at that as well, which I think is important.
Yeah, individual personalities contributing towards that. If you're somebody who finds it really, really difficult, if you're introverted in a large, big team situation, some can get over that and be able to integrate well. A Paul Scholes, for example, when he was playing football, was well known, and Leighton Baines, well known introverts who actually were able to overcome that and gel. And unfortunately, the personality of some characters just aren't able to get into that situation where they can mesh.
I think that covers kind of that stage of it. Should we look at one small bit and then we'll bring it to an end for today? We're going to look at something called the Ringelmann effect.
Yeah.
There's quite a few ways of summing it up, really, but the Ringelmann effect relates that as your group size increases, potentially the individual productivity in that group decreases a bit. So we've got the three of us working together now, but if we added in three more people, would one of us take 5 or 10% off our performance?
Yeah, and I think the thing is that you've got, again, it's the psychological factor of understanding that the more people that there are within a team that are all working towards a task, if it goes wrong, then the opportunity to pass responsibility and blame onto others is kind of increased, and that naturally allows that little reduction in motivation, which then transfers to that reduction in effort, if you like. And it's all about effort, isn't it? It's about the amount that you can put in to that group task.
Yeah.
You can also hide, can't you? You can hide away. And so in such a, you know, when you've got more and more people there, it's easier to be able to mask your own performance by just hiding away from it and blaming other people. So I think, you know, when there's too many people, that can have a really negative impact on the team.
I think that's a really good point.
It all came from an actual study that was done by, I think it was Max Ringelmann, and it was about tug of war, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So he got essentially one person to pull on the rope as hard as absolute possible, and then they were able to pull a particular force, a particular weight. They then added two, and then three, and then four, and every single time, even though the perception was that they were putting in the maximum effort, actually, the individual, if you were to take everybody's individual weight that they were able to pull, it didn't match up to what it should have been with the one person and the weight that they pulled. Let's say that was 10. Actually, it would be slightly less than that combined. It would only make up to 9 when you had 4 people pulling. And they're suggesting that the more and more people that you've got, the more social loafing happens. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's going to be massively important for the guys that are doing the actual coursework on this one as well, to talk through the study that has led to the theory that we're then talking about, that can happen in American football teams, for example, where you've got sort of about 40 players, haven't you? You've got your attacking team and your defensive team. Yeah. That's how it actually is applied into team scenarios in professional sport.
I think you've got two things, obviously, the Ringerman effect being one of them, but a consequence of that is the social loafing that Mr. Nash spoke about there. If you put in less effort when you're working in a group than when you work alone, that's when social loafing can occur. And basically the question is, it's quite a self-reflective one, do you work equally as hard as part of a group as you would on an individual project? Because for that to work, you've got to get a group of people together that are pooling their best ideas and skills and talents. If that isn't happening, you've got social loafing occurring and potentially the Ringerman effect coming into play in your team as well. Which is quite theory heavy for us, actually, on a Friday. That's not too bad.
Perfect. Yeah, leads us in nicely, though, doesn't it? It's a nice one to talk about in terms of examples, because there's so many teams out there, so many people follow them, so many people playing them. And it's important to think back as well to your own teams that you've played in. And where you might have seen some of these theories, even just a little flash of them or a little glimmer, actually seen them in practice. Have you ever had somebody who's, you know, great player but doesn't necessarily pull their weight in gameplay, or you know, a leader that's coming in and taking a bit of a step back when things are going well, and why? And it's really important to have your own examples as well.
I think today's been massive, and I think it's fair to say Year 12 need to be getting on top of this podcast. It's got a lot of that information that we're going to use with them. I think this is really useful. If you've got anybody that's listening, if you're in Year 11 thinking about coming into next year, this is a good thing to download, and it's quite a good way of getting an idea of what sort of stuff we're covering when we're doing our BTEC National PE as well.
For sure, and we'll try to vary it up as well. You know, although we follow certain pathways in terms of our qualifications, we'll try and mix it up and discuss things from other units as well that might be coming up, so that we keep it as fresh as we can.
Yeah, I think next week we'll take a look at group cohesion, and maybe we'll try and split the podcast and look at one other area as well. We're trying to work on getting a guest on at the minute as well.
That's it.
So we'll see how we get on. Is there anything else you guys want to add, or should we say see you next week?
Stay safe.
Yeah, thank you very much, and stay safe all, and look forward to doing it again.
All right, see you next week.
Keep active, everyone.